Hey everyone, welcome to the Delta Flyers with Tom and Harry as we journey through episodes of Star Trek Voyager. Your two hosts along this journey are my fellow Voyager series regular, Mr. Robert Duncan McNeil, and your favorite forever ensign, Garrett Wong. Remember, you can get the full version of this podcast by signing up to become a patron at patreon.com/thedeltaflyers.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Robbie McNeil.
Whoa, hey, hello, man. There, buddy. How are you?
Good. You look a little, something's different about your face right
really?
Now. What's going on?
Well, interesting you should say that. I'm very sort of short coiffed on my beard right now.
You look younger, I'm going to say.
Really?
With a shorter beard, yes.
Oh, interesting.
Yes.
I decided back in like December that I would grow a winter beard.
Yeah.
And I had a beard that was like Grizzly Adams. I don't know what. It was a crazy long beard, but it was driving me crazy.
Okay.
It was just driving me nuts.
And so it was itchy. Like what is it? What is it about the beard that
drives
you nuts?
Yeah, it was itchy. It was just, I felt like I always looked disheveled. I felt like I just constantly looked. But look, I'll show you. I'm going to show for those that are patrons that have the video version of this podcast.
Yes.
I'm going to show you. That was last week. That was last weekend. That was the beard. I mean,
yeah.
Come on. That's a lot of beard.
It's slightly homeless looking, but
right?
it's still impressive though. Anytime anyone can grow a full beard like that, it's very masculine.
I don't know. Yeah. It was fun, but it was just, I was getting so annoyed. And by the way, you know, we film on Resident Alien, 12 hours a day, 14 hours a day sometimes, and I've got a mask on my face constantly.
Oh, yeah, a mask and that beard.
Mm-mm. So the beard would like push the mask and squish it up on my nose. And I don't know. I was just like, this is too much happening on my face.
So what day did you cut this off? How long ago did it?
About 20 minutes ago.
So you're going to be doing this and grabbing nothing is what's going to happen.
It's weird. Yeah, it is weird.
You'll reach for your chin where you think the length is and it's going to be gone.
It's a little strange, you know, and there's still like beard shaving.
That's what that is. I kept looking.
Oh, did you see it?
Yes. I was like, he has a lot of lint on his.
I took a shower and it just keeps falling out because there was a lot of beard, a lot of hair on my face.
Okay.
And you know what's funny is the fans, because I'll do cameos or these, you know, videos that people, you know, not often, but now and then I'll get a request for that and I'll send it out. And I know people are like, oh my God, what is like, that's a lot of beard on your face. And I've seen fans, you know, commenting about the, you know, Tom Paris didn't have a beard. I don't know. So,
oh my goodness.
So here I am.
There you are. You're closer to Paris now than you ever were.
A little bit closer back to Paris.
Yeah.
My Yes Ma'am t-shirt on. I've got my Roots and Wings distillery. This is from British Columbia.
Nice.
A wonderful kind of a boutique distillery out on a farm in near Fort Langley, British Columbia.
Oh, cool.
Rebecca and I went out there a couple weeks ago. It was such a great, you know, great like organic food, locally distilled liquors and spirits, vodkas, gins, bourbons, Canadian whiskey, things like that.
In Vancouver?
Yeah, about an hour from Vancouver, an hour east, out in the farm country. It's a great place. So I got a hat.
That's awesome. I'm a little tanner. I don't know if you can tell. I've been on a cruise ship. So
I know.
Yeah, the Star Trek cruise. It was quite amazing, super fun. From Voyager, Timothy Russ and Robert Picardo were there. So Bobby and Tim were both there for Voyager. No, Ethan. Ethan didn't make it this year. So
yeah,
and hopefully you will be able to make it at some point. It'd be nice to see.
I was supposed to come last year.
Yeah.
I was supposed to come this year, but I've committed to next year. I'm really gonna try to schedule my life around it. It's always directing stuff gets in the way.
So. I hear you, but that would be nice. They've been asking for you. They would love to see you. Just so you
I've know. Never done the Star Trek cruise. I think I'm the only one that's never done one.
I think you and Rebecca would have a really fun time.
I know we would.
Because you haven't even done them when they were done by other companies.
No, not even I've about never done a Star Trek cruise. I'm dying to do it.
Yes, it'll be super good. All right, so this week's episode is Timeless. And this is the 100th episode of Voyager. So we are at that point. This is a signature episode of Voyager. And I have seen this so many times, backwards and forwards. And you probably have not watched it since. I don't even know if you watched it when it was on primetime back in the day.
I don't know. I'm excited to see it.
Yeah. All right. So let's go watch this. And we will be right back with our discussion and our recap of Timeless. We're back from watching the 100th episode.
Yes, we are. Wow.
Woo.
Wow. That's
a big one. That thing moves. It's a big one. And it's the pacing is good. I like the pacing on that.
Yeah. The pacing was really good.
Yeah.
The scope of it, visual scope with all the ice stuff, the crash on the planet was phenomenal.
Yeah.
The acting all around.
A lot of good elements.
Everybody did really well. So,
Okay.
Yeah.
Poetry. Let's start.
Let's start with some poetry. How about a haiku? Just start with a nice, clean.
Yeah, just a clean haiku. Clean haiku.
Okay.
Here we go. My haiku for Timeless. Slipstream flight is planned. Ship crashes and all perish. Harry saves the day. I got nothing else. That's good.
It's good. It's nice and for an epic episode. It's a nice...
As simple as can be.
Haiku.
Now, let me hear your creative.
Here we go with our limerick for Timeless.
Okay.
Harry and Chakotay survive the slipstream. Voyager's crash was really extreme. Harry plans to change the past, but he has to work fast. The future saved the day, it would seem.
Nice. All right.
What do you think?
Yeah, very good. Very good. I've never been disappointed with any of your and Rebecca's limericks. They're so good that I'm always happy and excited to hear them. So that's another one that you did quite well. So I'm
thank
happy
you. To hear that. Thank you very much.
Yeah. Did you do any research on the one guest star that we have?
Let me get there. So let's talk about the episode Timeless. Teleplay by Brannon Braga and Joe Manosky.
Mm-hmm.
Story by Rick Berman, Brannon Braga, and Joe Manosky. Yep. Directed by LeVar Burton. We talked about LeVar a little bit.
We did.
All the fans know and love LeVar.
Yeah.
Pristine Harnos is really our only guest star. She plays Tessa Omond.
Yes.
Omond, I think.
Yeah. Omond, yes.
And actually, Christine Harnos and LeVar Burton was in the episode.
Yes, that's right. Sorry, LeVar acted as well in this one.
Yeah, we had two guest stars, but again, we'll talk about LeVar in the episode when we get there. But Christine Harnos, she was born in Toronto, so she's Canadian.
Yeah.
And of course, I love to just keep it simple with our guest stars and talk about their first job. This one shocked me.
What?
Okay, so Christine Harnos she'd been a model, I guess, as a young person.
Yes.
But her very first acting job was in 1988. She did a movie called Forbidden Son.
What?
And guess who was in the cast? Besides Lauren Hutton, some of the stars, Robert Beltran was in her first movie.
What?
Yes.
What? No.
Yes. Uh-huh.
You just blew my mind. Isn't that crazy? Yes. What?
I know.
Oh my God.
Usually it's some obscure little weird job. And I went to her first job, Forbidden Son, 1988. Robert Beltran was in the movie with her.
I have to make a note. I need to watch this.
We are all connected.
We are.
Life is
connected.
In
this universe, everyone is connected. Yes, we are.
I agree.
We are. That's amazing.
Well, okay. Let's dive right in. Into Timeless. A recap, memories in review.
Yeah.
Commentary.
How about this? I think you can do all the descriptions of what's happening, and then I'll just tell you what happened during that scene. scene.
And right. That's, let's go. Okay. Well, all right. Our opening shot, I got to say, I just want to comment on this. The opening shot is panning across this Arctic landscape. And I immediately remembered Dan Curry's work on those kinds of shots, just like the one behind you, the photo you've got up behind you. Everybody's got to remember, this was long before modern technology of Photoshop and CGI programs that can kind of blend and meld things. This was very handmade, everything. Yes. And Dan Curry came from the old school. So when I saw that opening shot, I looked at it and I thought, God, Dan and those guys, that team, often it was Dan's hand-painted. He was an artist, beautiful landscape artist and art in general. But he would hand-paint elements that would go into, I guess you could just call it a collage of elements where part of it was hand-painted Dan Curry elements. Part of it is some stock footage photos or even some moving elements, a video of like an Arctic ice area. And as I looked at that first shot, I thought, God, there's so many elements in this one shot that Dan Curry collaged and combined together to create this original environment. It was just a really epic shot. I loved it.
Yeah. And just to think how time intensive that was for him to just sit there and paint each individual detail in some of these images that you see. It's tremendous that the work that he put into it. It's very impressive. Very impressive.
When I was producing Chuck 10 years later, I was 2008, 2009, something like that.
That's right.
I brought Dan Curry over to do visual effects on Chuck. And Dan used a lot of the same techniques on our show. So, you know, on Chuck, we were able to create environments that Dan hand-painted the same way he did on Voyager. It was really amazing. I love working with Dan and awesome
guy. Because you guys had a lot of exotic locations on Chuck as a you know, as a super spy. He was all over the world, so
all over the world,
something that Dan had to help with there.
And definitely, we shot everything in Burbank, California. If you're, you know, if we're out in the deserts of the Middle East, Dan Curry created that environment. We're in Moscow, Dan Curry created. We're in Prague in a train station, he would create that.
On Chuck, you did have an icy snowy episode as well. I remember that you guys went
somewhere. We went that I directed that episode. We were up in the Swiss Alps, and there there was a whole sequence of a fight on a gondola. Rob Riggle, the comedian, was on that episode. And Chuck had to, you know, hang outside of the gondola on this fight. And that was all done on stage with Dan Curry creating the environment. A very creative guy. He did it on Voyager. He he's done it in so many places.
And so we actually, you know, we were on stage 16 for the that frozen barren landscape, and I'll tell you that point where Chakotay slips a little bit and he kind of came, I thought wow, that was actually him slipping, and then he kind of caught himself and it looked very real, as if he did slip on the ice. But just that when the camera pulls back and now you see what they're fussing over, it's the hull of Voyager buried
under
beneath
the
ice. Just an amazing shot, an amazing
very cool shot. I wrote whoa
moment.
Now at this point, I didn't even know who was in those suits because there was no talking. It was just one line, and I was
we're here.
And I thought, oh, that sounds like Robert Beltran. But
it was
I at this point I didn't know. I
couldn't
remember.
That's right.
So they beam inside the ship, the Voyager that's under the ice, and we realize it's Harry and Chakotay. I think Harry says, not exactly the way I remember it. It's one of the first lines in there. It's frozen. There's snow inside. Power is down. We see shots of the frozen bridge. We see shots of the frozen Jeffrey's tube. I think with Harry crawling through there. And it's just, it's amazing the work that the scenic departments did to bring snow and ice and really... do a lot of scenic work to our standing sets, which is a big deal to do that, because we got to restore it, you know, for the next episode. And it's a scheduling deal too. Like when they have to do that much work on these sets, they have to go, all right, let's start with a bridge. We'll destroy the bridge, ice up the bridge, because then while we're shooting some other scenes, we can fix it, restore it, so we can shoot the scenes where the bridge looks normal.
Right.
So, you know, you got to have to schedule all that stuff in a very specific way. And sometimes the crews are working overnight, you know, when we're not there, the midnight shift comes in and they're doing all that scenic work so that it's ready for us to whatever version we're going to shoot in the next day.
Yeah.
So that was a lot of work. I noticed that right out of the gate.
Tons of work. And also, you know, the times that we've had the bridge in a distressed mode in the past, you have parts of it that are kind of messed up, but not the entire bridge. Like every bit of that bridge had to be sprayed down with that fake, you know, to make it look like it was frozen, that frost on everything. And not only on everything, on every person got, including yourself.
Including me. Well, speaking of that, so Chakotay is walking around the bridge looking, and I see him walk by Tom Paris dead on the floor, frozen. And I didn't remember this before, but as soon as I saw that, I was like, oh my God, I remember getting the dead frozen makeup on and then getting down in that position and they were sprinkling snow
on top of you,
on top of me. And I remember at one point, like it got in my mouth and I was like swallowing it. And I was like, pff, pff. I couldn't get the, you know, whatever it was. It was like, I think it was potato flakes. Like,
is that what it was?
Yeah, I think it was because it would sort of mush up like mashed potatoes, you know, like freeze dried potatoes that.
Yeah. That's what it was.
I think that's what they put around the face so that if it got in your mouth, which I remember it did, all those potato flakes got in my mouth. And I was great.
Kind of had dried out mashed potato for lunch is what you had a little bit. Yeah, exactly. Wow. I mean, just the music they had in the background there. It's just so haunting to see frozen Janeway, frozen Paris. And then, you know, Harry's climbing through the Jeffrey's tube, seeing dead bodies there. It's just, it's very,
I feel like and I feel like there was more on this bridge scene. When I looked at that, when he walked by and I remembered being on the ground and that, I feel like there was more of a scene that got cut out. I don't know why.
Well,
I feel like there was something that happened on the bridge that got cut out. That's all I can't remember what it was.
And that is entirely possible. A lot of times we did shoot extra stuff that never made it into the episode. So you may very well be right about that.
Yeah.
So when Chakotay finds Popsicle 7, he has her beamed out. And basically we do see Harry go into the sick bay area and he brings the doctor online. And Harry is now, you do get a glimpse of, this is not the Harry that we know. He's very no nonsense. He's almost brusque to the point of, you know, very curt with his answers. And and the doctor's like, Ensign. And Harry's like, I go by Harry now. I mean, I'm not even Ensign. You know, so he's really just there to get something done. And that's it. He doesn't care about anything else. He's one-minded for sure.
Harry says near the end of that scene, we're changing history.
Yes. Yes.
Which I was like, whoa,
what's all right, this?
Let's see what's happening.
Yeah.
By the way, I did notice like all the purple lighting. I thought Marvin Rush did a great job of creating a lighting environment, like in all of those sets, and particularly sick bay, that was just kind of purpley in a way that it felt icy.
Yes.
Like even, you know, you can see
it
behind
felt
you.
Cold. It felt cold. Yeah.
Like that ice. I'm looking at the colors of your background right now.
Yes.
And there's kind of like a bluish purple icy feel to those icy colors.
That's right.
And Marvin put that all throughout the ship. I thought it looked great.
Yes.
It's really good. Next we go to a slow motion flashback. So we realize we're going back in time. And there's this slow motion flashback of some kind of party in engineering.
Yeah, right.
Streamers. And you see Roxanne or B'Elanna walking with a bottle of champagne through the crowd. And they're all cheering in slow motion. And then she smashes the champagne bottle on the warp core railing.
Yeah.
And then we go into regular time out of slow motion.
Speeds it up. Yep. To Janeway's speech, right? Yeah. She makes this speech on the christening of the quantum slipstream drive. I do like that Torres used a two-handed grip, you know, when she smashed that thing, she was into it. And we also learn, Robbie, that we are now 4 years, 2 months and 11 days into our time in the Delta Quadrant. So this is one of the times that we know the time. And that doesn't happen that often.
No,
we know exactly how much time we spent in the Delta Quadrant.
Again, a lot of times they didn't want to date any episode because they wanted people to be able to watch them out of sequence.
That's right. That's right.
If it was in reruns, they didn't want people to go, oh, I missed something. They just wanted it to be any order you wanted to watch it. It should it should be satisfying. But this is one where it did matter how long we've been gone.
For sure.
And how much time we had left to get back. The slipstream drive would get us there.
Yes. Like lickety split. We'd be home. Right. Yep. But I love LeVar's staging of this scene. He could have kept Janeway on the same level as Torres, but no, he put her up in the second level. So we actually look up to Janeway as she's making the speech. And so I just love just everything about this scene. I really enjoyed it. I thought it was super cool. Neelix with his Talaxian fur fly. As a sign of good fortune.
Yes, to give B'Elanna the Talaxian fur fly. And the first thing I thought was, oh my God, has he been carrying this on our ship for 4.5 years?
Yeah.
This is disgusting. Yeah. It's like the size of a squirrel or a cat.
Yeah,
it's a fly.
It's a fly.
And it's good luck. He says he hung it in his engine room for 6 years.
Right.
He had this thing hanging.
Clearly, he's kept it in his quarters somewhere where we've never seen it.
Dried? What did he do? Did he taxidermy this thing?
He taxidermied it. He stuffed it. He did everything. Still, it's really gross, though.
It is a cool prop. We only see it in the scene.
Yeah, that's it.
And it looks very insect-like, but with fur or something.
It kind of looks like a huge bumblebee or a wasp or something like that. Yeah.
And I was thinking that probably the props department had to coordinate with makeup in some way for some of those elements, because that's a specialized kind of prop that we would build.
Yeah.
Yeah. Our props department and makeup department obviously are awesome. So I love Tuvok's line. He says, Mr. Neelix, you are an unending source of astonishment when he sees the Talaxian fur fly.
Yeah.
Just his dry reading of that was great.
Yeah, and all throughout, there's some amazing bits of humor throughout this very serious episode, and that's one of them with Tuvok commenting on Neelix. I love that.
And another one comes up right after this. Doc approaches Seven.
Yeah.
And she says, my ocular implants aren't working. And he's like, I need to get you to sick bay. And he scans her and realizes her blood alcohol level is very high.
He's drunk.
And he's like, well, obviously the Borg can't hold their liquor.
Yeah.
And they're kind of walking. He's escorting her out to kind of sober her up. And she's patting him on the back going, we are as one.
Yeah.
We are as one. It's very funny. More comedy.
Yes. Yes. That could be a t-shirt.
That was rare for Seven to have that kind of humor. That was probably one of the earliest, you know, attempts at humor for that character. And then they started doing more of it as we went along.
Oh, yeah. And really, I think Jeri Ryan as an actress was probably pretty excited to be able to let loose. Yeah, just for once to not be the Seven that we all know, you know. Yeah. And now she's like, hey, we are as one. And for her, she must have had a blast, because it's something different than what we're used to seeing from her.
Agreed.
But that was a cool shot, because as they walk past, Harry makes a comment. Well, you know, check out our Borg drone, you know, check out our Seven. She's completely drunk, yada, yada. And that's when we find that Paris is busy at a console. He's tapping some buttons and he has discovered... You know, it's so funny. Paris who's doing the science right now. Okay.
I just want to say.
Yeah, I know.
If everybody had listened to me, I was going to say.
Tom Paris is rarely the voice of scientific reason, but you are the voice of reason in this episode. You said it. You're like, look, I found a 0.42 phase variance. And even Harry's like, 0.42, that's nothing. And you're like, no. This is something.
This is serious.
Really serious.
This is bad. We should not do this.
And even Harry's like, listen, buddy, it's probably a sensor glitch. Let's just go to the holodeck and run some simulations. Simple as that. It's good. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. You should have listened to me.
But I just think it's funny. Of all the people at the party, the only person who's not partying is Paris.
Because he's a changed man. He's beginning. He is changing. And, you know,
he's changing. But, you know, I would expect Paris would be leading the conga line. You know, he'd be like, come on back to Alpha Quadrant. Let's go now. I mean, you would expect that would be what would be happening. But no, that's not it.
We go to the holodeck. We're doing the simulation. Just Harry and Paris, which is funny because when I first saw it, I was like, that's the bridge looks so weird with just two people. There's nobody else around.
Yeah.
It feels like we would have created a holodeck with a full complement of a bridge crew instead of just you and me hanging out on this holodeck bridge. Mm-hmm. But anyway, we try this slipstream thing, the simulation. Yeah. Clearly it's, you know,
no bueno.
And then Tom says, we've done 23 simulations and had 23 catastrophes. Please listen to me.
Right. This is not going to work. Clearly.
It's not going to work. We should not do this. Cut to engineering. Mm-hmm. And we're giving the bad news. And the kind of the group is there. Everybody's there. Tuvok and B'Elanna.
Yeah.
Captain. And the group is kind of agreeing. And then I will take responsibility. Foolish Tom says. But Harry had an idea. Why didn't I just stick to let's not do this?
Yeah.
Because I literally go, well, Harry's got an idea. And then I like prompt you. I go,
Come on, do it, Harry. Do it.
So, I take responsibility.
Yeah. Well, that's just you being a good friend. And I think that you saw some, you know, value to my theory or some merit to my theory that, yes, it could work. So let's just throw it out there. You did say no in the beginning, and then you kind of gave in a little bit and said, oh, try your theory out. And it convinces Janeway, because Janeway is desperate to get her crew home. Mm-hmm. So she's going to take the risk. And she's like, okay, I'll think about it.
I also wonder in this scene, because everybody's basically saying, yeah, let's not do this. Like, we could have ended the conversation there. But Tom goes, well, Harry's got an idea. So I wonder if Harry would have pitched this idea if Tom hadn't said, hey, come on, Harry. You know what I mean? Like, maybe
he wouldn't have. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, I'm saying, like, in a way, was he going to offer the idea if Tom hadn't said, come on, tell him? Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah, I think he was working up the courage to be able to say what his theory was. And Tom kind of knew that, all right, This may take all afternoon. Mm-hmm. So let me just prompt him and get him going, which is what you did. You were the spark plug. And Janeway's like, that sounds like a good plan.
And the plan is, just to explain the plan about the slipstream.
Yes, yes.
Plan for the slipstream is that we'll send a shuttle out in front of Voyager.
Correct.
So that when Voyager goes into slipstream, the shuttle will sort of ride the wave up front and send back the variances,
the phase corrections
to keep Voyager in a safe slipstream.
Correct. So
that it doesn't have these problems.
So it doesn't fall out of it. Yeah.
So the shuttle is going to be Harry and Chakotay. Ultimately, they're going to ride in the shuttle, send back the corrections, and then we'll all be good. That's the plan.
Right.
And it, in theory, should work.
Yes. In theory. And we don't know about Chakotay until later, into the next scene.
Yeah, we don't know about that.
Oh, by the way, let me just go back to that scene at engineering. I was so nervous that day. Oh my gosh.
Were you?
Because I haven't had, up until that point, I hadn't really had any scenes where I'm, you know,
kind of the leader of the group.
Yeah, I'm the leader of the group. I'm really impassioned about this idea, and I've got to convince everybody that this is a valid idea. And I just remember going, oh my gosh, oh my gosh.
Yeah, it's funny that you say that, because I made a note. I wasn't even going to bring it. I make a lot of notes. Sometimes I skip them. Sometimes
you don't. Yeah.
So this one I made, I said, group scenes are really funny. Harry's in the center for this one, but it's always funny being part of the group when it's not your story.
Right.
There's a different role that we play when we're in these, you know, briefing room scenes or whatever, when you're the leader with the idea and when you're just sort of part of the ensemble.
Right.
And usually you and I are part of the ensemble.
We're
in the briefing room and we're tossing in a couple lines here or there, but we're not leading the group. And I did note that. I thought, wow, you're in the center for this one. Like, you had to carry this scene.
Yeah.
I always like being part of the group because I'm usually goofing off or doing something.
Exactly. You don't have as much responsibility.
I'm trying to make Beltran laugh off in the corner or something.
You try to make all of us laugh.
Let's face it,
it wasn't just Beltran. But I do like that final gesture at the very end of that scene in engineering. I point at you and I go, yes, you know, I do this.
Oh, yeah.
And it was kind of like my choice as an actor was, my backstory behind that was, we had debated this back and forth. And then I said, well, here's my theory. What if we do this? And you still had reservations about my theory. And you were saying to me, you know what? I don't think Janeway's going to go for this. Captain's not going to go for this. And I said, yeah, but what if we join it this way? And so when the captain's like, give me my, you know, put the flight plan on my desk by, you know, this time, whatever. That's when I thought, oh, we got it. We did it. And so I added that little point at you and the gesture at you.
Yeah.
Sort of, you know, playing off a backstory that we didn't even see yet. So
yeah, it was a nice intercut there too. Because you kind of did that. We did this celebration. And I think I sort of had a
you
big
did a
smile.
Little smile like, good for you, little buddy.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah, it was good.
All right, let's jump to Janeway's Quarters. You want to talk about this one?
Yeah. Well, since I am a JC shipper, and we all know that. And by the way, earlier when Janeway says in the engineering, when they're celebrating the christening of the warp drive, and Janeway says to Chakotay, well, you got any plans? He said, no, nothing special, just a date with a replicator. And she's like, cancel that date or something.
Right, right.
I was like, whoa,
what Janeway. Is this? Yeah.
And here we are.
In her quarters,
in and it's a romantic dinner. There's
very romantic
candles and the finest crystal.
Yeah.
And it's a beautiful. They're celebrating their last night in the Delta Quadrant, mm-hmm. and she says to him, "I've decided to go to do Harry's plan."
Right.
And Chakotay is kind of skeptical. She goes, "You know, what do you think? How do you feel about that?"
Yeah.
He goes, "Well, it's very risky, and I'm just skeptical. He's not sure."
Right.
And she says, I know it's a risk, but I'm willing to take it. Are you with me?
Mm-hmm.
And he says, always.
Always.
Oh, my JC Shipper heart just went, always with her, of course. Uh-huh.
And then Braga and Minoski add in the humor because she goes, Janeway says, speaking of risks, are you ready to try some home cooking? And that's when Chakotay says, I'll alert sick bay, which is very funny. It was a little
there's a little comedy there. I mean, yes. I did write down dad joke because there's a couple of dad jokes in there. I feel like that's
you need those, you know, to balance out the craziness and the seriousness.
By the way, she says, are you ready to try some home cooking? He says, I'll alert sick bay.
Yeah.
And then she laughs and cups her hand on his.
Oh, I didn't notice that. I was writing notes. She touches his hand.
She's like,
oh no.
reaches in and caresses him.
She caresses
I was like, Janeway does not do intimate hand cupping on every character.
No.
This is only with Chakotay that she does.
Okay.
This.
And you know what? Picard never intimately, you know, hand cupped Frakes' face. You know what I'm saying? That never happened. So very few first officers get their face caressed by their captain.
I agree.
Unless there's something going on.
I mean, come on, people.
This is
the math adds up. It's the romantic dinner, it's the hand cupping, it's all the stuff.
I do want to make one note about the food that she prepared. She said, I have a special dish that my grandmother used to make back on Earth. And she said vegetable biryani, which is an East Indian dish, which I was so happy to hear because they selected, you know, Braga and Minoski as the writers made a decision. They said, you know what? Let's pick a dish that is not your standard. Because she should have said my grandma's pot roast, you know, something that was very American, Caucasian, you know, sort of, dish. But no, they went with an East Indian dish, which shows that at least by the 24th century that, you know, all these cultures have kind of combined into one cohesive unit in a way that people are really used to having East Indian food because they like it, you know, not because it's exotic.
And that's a family tradition.
Range. Yeah, it's a family tradition now.
Yep.
So I love that. I love
Agreed.
That.
Agreed. Now we go on to the Delta Flyer shuttle.
Yes.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at cenovus.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
We meet Mullet Harry for the first time.
We see Mullet Harry. This is the first time everyone's stuff is off of their face. They're not in the parkas anymore, right?
Yeah.
And I want to tell you, we went through multiple tests on what the hair would look like 15 years in the future. So
it's amazing that you landed on the Mullet Harry wig.
That was not even one of the options. That just showed up on the day of filming. I'm like, what is this? This is not what we decided on. So one option they had, they put a wig on me. The hair was so long, it was down past my back. Okay.
Wow.
And I thought, oh, this looks cool. And so they actually took a picture of me standing outside the makeup trailer, and it was kind of windy. So I'm standing there and the hair is like blowing back like that. It looks pretty badass, to be perfectly honest. So I said, I think this would be the best one to go with, you know, because Harry just, you know, he's quit Starfleet. He's let his hair grow out. He doesn't even care about, you know, his hair. And it's been years now, so it wouldn't be this long. And then they showed me another option. Then all of a sudden, out of the blue, on the day that I'm working, they give me this wig that's basically a mullet. And I'm like, you're gonna give me the mullet? They're like, well, this is what we decided was best. We didn't want to go with. I go, when did I get to chime in on this? They were like, well, you know, we talked to the producers. They think this is the
it worked. It worked, but it was definitely a mullet. But it did work. It definitely told the story of like, he's no longer a military, you know, he's not Starfleet,
right?
Kind of buttoned up. It definitely told the story, but it was a mullet.
Still a mullet.
Let's be honest. We do realize they bring the doctor on. The doctor's like, what is going on? They say, we're 15 years in the future.
That's the first number we get here. 15 years.
15 years that they're in the Takara sector, which is just outside the Alpha Quadrant.
Yeah.
And they tell the doctor that the rest of the crew is dead.
Yeah.
The Voyager crashed on an ice planet, killed everyone on board. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love the gray hair. I made a note. I love the angry Harry. Harry's definitely angry and bitter. Different guy, clearly, because the mullet tells us. But no, because he's just, his personality is very different.
For sure.
And we also find out that Starfleet gave up on trying to find Voyager a long time ago.
Yeah.
And that Chakotay and Harry have not given up, and they've continued to try to find it. And that's how they located it on this ice planet.
And the doctor's curious. He's like, what are you going to do in terms of changing history? A message back in time. How is this possible? And we tell the doctor that the plan is to use Seven's interplexing beacon, one of her cranial implants, to send a message back in time. And Chakotay is, he gets all science and he has some major technobabble in this scene.
Oh, I wrote this down. Yeah, I said Beltran had so much technobabble and he hated technobabble.
So Chakotay asked the doctor to extract the interplexing beacon and figure out the translink frequency. And then this is the line that I remember when I read this line for Chakotay in the script, I thought, man, he's going to hate this. We may not even be able to get this entire line on film. And it is, can you access Seven's chronometric node and pinpoint the exact moment her cybernetic implants disengage from her organic systems? I thought that one right there is going to kick
he'll
him
never
in the
make
butt.
It.
Yeah, he'll never make it. He's going to die. He'll be a casualty.
And it's funny because Beltran loves Shakespeare.
He loves it.
He did Hamlet while we were you know, he played Hamlet. He learned, you know, Shakespearean text he can learn, but technobabble?
Yeah.
No.
He told me, I remember he sent me the invite. He says, I'm playing Hamlet at this local theater in Los Angeles. And I thought, there's no way how is he going to get through all the Shakespeare? If he flips out on a few lines of technobabble, there's no way he's going to have to stop the production of Hamlet and say, wait, hold on. Cosmo line, and ask Cosmo for a line. Because he's not going to remember it. But when I went to see him, he was perfect. He had every line on point and he never went up on a line. So I was very impressed because he loves Shakespeare. He doesn't love technobabble.
We learn in this sequence that that they are fugitives.
Yes.
That they've been accused of high treason and
yeah.
and they have violated a conspiracy to violate the temporal prime directive.
Right. Because they stole, because then the doctor says, how are you going to get this message to her in the past? And Harry shows the doctor a little case that has a Borg temporal transmitter that they stole from Starfleet, that Starfleet found in a cube, a Borg cube somewhere at some point. So this is the way that they're going to get this message through. But now they're criminals. They are criminals. And now we meet Tessa. Tessa comes in. She introduces herself to the doctor.
He says, how'd you get involved with Bonnie and Clyde? Yeah. How'd you get involved with Bonnie and Clyde? And Harry turns around and says, they're having sex.
Yeah. They're having just so blunt. Doesn't even
so
care.
So blunt. I loved it. It was great.
It's good. It was really good. Tessa comes in not only to say hi, but also that a Federation vessel is on an intercept course. So that's the warning. We've got to work as fast as we can. We jump to the bridge.
Before we jump to the bridge, I want to say.
Go.
So we're on the Delta Flyer.
Yes.
It seems. We say that. Yeah. But I built the Delta Flyer and I was like, where is this in the... What? When did the Delta Flyer become a giant ship with a science lab did we ever go back there?
We didn't, but when you built it, you did talk about how big it was, how much bigger it was in the actual pre-building phase. You mentioned that.
We just never saw it before.
We didn't know. No, we had no idea that there were racquetball courts as well on that shuttle. I mean, we had no clue.
There's a lap pool downstairs.
Yep. There's a dog park as well.
It's amazing. On this little shuttle. I had no idea.
Yeah. It's very much like a TARDIS from Doctor Who. It's much bigger on the inside is what the bottom line is. Now we actually jump back into the 15 years in the future time, we're on the bridge, the frozen bridge, and Chakotay and Tessa are at Harry's station. Tessa has located the sensor logs, but the computer is denying her access. Chakotay then walks down to his old seat and says, well, at least I've got my command codes. And he enters those and he accesses an active file. He says, oh, there's an active file in here. We hear a little bit of a snippet of Janeway saying, but should our luck run out, I'd like to say for the record that the crew of Voyager acted with distinction and valor. And that's when Chakotay feels it. Like he's kind of overwhelmed by the moment.
Tessa sees that.
Yeah, she sees it too. But instead of talking about Janeway, this is what twisted me a little bit. I thought he was going to say something about Kate, you know, about Janeway, his relationship with Janeway. But then he's like, you know, at the end, he's like, well, you know, I can't believe we've been working all this time to this moment and now we're here. And the only thing I can think about is losing you. And I'm like, why are you saying that? You should say something a bit positive about Janeway a little bit, but you know, it is what it is. That's his current relationship. But all the JC shippers were probably going, no, that is not the right one for you. They were pretty unhappy about that.
Well, she says to him, your heart has always been here on Voyager.
She does, which then the JC shippers go, yay, Tessa knows she's not the right person for you. And another joke, Tessa says, I don't suppose we have time for a tour. Chakotay answers, afraid not. Besides, I left my quarters a mess, which is like another dad joke.
There's a lot of dad jokes in this. We go to the shuttle and we see Harry leaving a message. We hear the end of a message
for a friend.
We don't know what it is. Doc gets his attention and he basically tells the doctor about how guilty he feels about all this.
Yes.
And I made a note. It's like almost like a Han Solo, like bitter, jaded, like he's just a totally different character.
Yeah.
I thought it was really, really cool.
Yeah. The homecoming. Cause he's describing the homecoming. The doctor asks Harry about the homecoming. He talks about the parade and everything and this and that and the guilt. And then the decision by Starfleet to call off the search was devastating to Harry, and Harry went to all the admirals and begged them. And they all said, nope, we're not going to continue this search. And that's when Harry quits Starfleet. And we have a computer announcement that the vessel was approaching. And this is when Harry is now in the Delta Flyer cockpit with the doctor.
Now I realize where we are. Now I was like starting to get away. Oh, okay. We really are on the Delta Flyer. Like now I see the helm. I see things that I remember.
Yes.
I'm starting to understand. And anyway, the doctor is doctor realizes he's on board with criminals, and he basically ends this scene with, all right, I'm with you. Let's tempt fate.
Now, if you notice, there's an ongoing theme of me slapping the doctor really hard. Okay. So I'm hitting him on the arm. I don't think that was in the script. I think that was probably my choice as an actor, because I felt the 15-year bitter, jaded Harry would be a little bit more, like I said, not only is he brusque when he's talking, he's also in his physicality.
He's a little harsher, rougher.
Exactly. So that was another choice I had made in this episode.
That's like me and you when I used to hit you on the chest or the arm, and you'd be like, ow.
Why are you hitting? I took that cue from you. I thought, you know what? Robbie kind of hits me, you know, off camera like that. I'm going to do the same. I'm going to bang. I'm going to rough up the doctor the way Robbie, you know, affectionately roughs me up in between scenes.
Exactly. So,
yeah, I took that cue from you.
Yeah.
All right. So we are now, now we have an intercut. Yeah. It's jumping back to the past between the bridge and the Delta Flyer cockpit with Chakotay and Harry in there. And now you hear Janeway's full message that Chakotay was listening to in the frozen bridge. And you hear what that is all about when she's talking to the crew, that log entry. And now Chakotay goes through this pre-flight checklist, which at the end he says, lunch. And I say salami sandwiches.
Yeah. Chakotay goes, shields. And you go, online.
Yeah.
Plasma. Stable.
Stable.
Lunch.
Lunch.
Salami sandwiches.
Yeah.
I was like, I wrote it down. Dad joke.
Dad joke. And also in this scene, I made it a point to make sure that my voice quality was still the optimistic Harry Kim that we're, and devoid of guilt Harry that we know of. And also with 15 year in the future, bitter Harry, I also changed my voice quality a little bit to be a gruffer, a little bit more raspy, just to have that difference between the two. We jump to the Delta Flyer cockpit in the 15 year in the future. Yes, back to the flyer. Chakotay and Tessa are now chatting with each other and trying to figure out how they can buy more time for Harry and the doctor. And that's when they decide to talk to whoever's chasing them. And now we see it's Captain LaForge of the Starship Challenger. He has his own galaxy class starship. Oh, I'm so proud of you, LaForge.
So proud of LaForge.
Oh my goodness. Yes. And also cool. He doesn't have the banana clip visor anymore.
I did notice LaVar blinking a lot with the contacts.
Yeah, the contacts probably got him good.
And I'm sure he was just like, oh, I can't. These contacts are bugging me.
Please end the scene so I can take them out.
It also reminded me when I saw a LaVar there doing the thing, it reminded me of when you're directing and acting in the same episode, because I did that a number of times.
Yes, you have.
I always remembered, I loved when I was directing and acting because I felt so much more engaged in the story and the script, and I just felt more relaxed.
Yeah.
I felt more confident with what this scene was about. Sometimes as an actor, you get the script kind of late. You don't study it quite as deeply in terms of the whole story and kind of where you fit in. And so I was watching those scenes with him thinking, wow, I wonder if he had the same experience when he was directing and acting in the show, that he felt, you know, more connected or something. He seemed like he did. He seemed very,
I definitely think, like you said, you probably felt more invested, you know, because you are, that is your episode that you know backwards and forwards, you know everything about it, what camera angles are going to be used. So it's definitely probably helpful.
Yeah.
But, you know, the only thing, and I've talked about this with you before, I mean, you still have to have someone watch what you're doing though, right? So did you ask, who did you say Marvin, check, make sure that I'm, you know.
I would usually talk to Marvin, or I'd ask the other actors in the scene if I was doing a scene with the doctor or something.
Yeah. Keep an eye on me and see if there's
anything. Yeah, like, how did that scene feel? How did that close-up feel? Do you feel like we were, you know, in the zone?
Yeah.
Marvin would be another one I would lean on for that kind of feedback. And one time when I was directing, I think this, I can't remember which time, it was early on. It wasn't the first episode, but maybe the second one I directed, that I actually hired a directing / acting teacher, a friend of mine who taught acting and directing classes. And I said, hey, can I pay you to come down when I'm on some of the days when I'm acting and directing and watch me? And I just told everybody, oh, he's a friend of mine coming down to hang out. Because I didn't want, you know, and then I go over to, his name's Mark, and I go over to him and I'd be like, hey, you know, I was How was that? I wanted to get some real feedback. So, but I didn't want people to know, like, I had a coach on set or whatever.
And you're like, Mark, and by the way, you are my cousin from North Carolina. And he's like,
I don't know why. I should have just said, I've got
this. This is my acting coach. Yeah.
I don't know why.
I don't think anybody would have thought.
Nobody would have cared.
No one would have cared, Robbie. But I know that you're feeling like, maybe I shouldn't say this. So,
The other thing I want to bring up is, so we're intercutting with them on the talking to LaForge. On the helm of Delta Flyer, back to Harry and the doctor working on this board technology.
Yeah.
The doctor has this part of her body. It's like the metal skull. It's Borg metal with an eye socket. And I just thought,
hey, it's not just an eye socket. The eyeball is there.
The eyeball's there. Yeah,
the fake eyeball.
I thought, wait a minute. We just skipped over the scene where the doctor cuts Seven open and dissects her. Like, we just skipped that
scene.
And I guess her body's in the refrigerator over there with her part of her head cut off. I was just like, that is, do we have to do that? Like,
and by the way, that eyeball that we see is the same eyeball that was fashioned and crafted by the doctor, because when we took her little ocular Borg eyepiece off that was covering her, that one eye, you know, that was what had to be created to make her look human. Otherwise she'd have a socket and that's it.
Oh, I totally get it. I get, but I was just like, wait, we skipped over the whole part of cutting her apart.
But the minute you saw him holding that, you thought about that.
That's
scene.
All I could think of. Is he had to dissect her. Isn't he traumatized? Like, he likes Seven.
He doesn't.
Anyway.
Very true. Now we jump back to 15 years in the past. It's now back and forth between the bridge and the Delta Flyer cockpit. And I love that LaVar decided to put some sweat on me. So he sprayed little spray. Yeah. To make it look like Harry's like, you know, he's definitely feeling the pressure. And even what makes it even worse is that we lose communications, right? So now he can't even say anything because I can't hear Voyager can't hear me.
Nope.
So Harry's really freaking out. So now back on the bridge, I think Tom says there's an overload of the quantum matrix. We can't even shut down the slipstream drive. And that's the big uh-oh moment right there. Like, there's going to be problems. There's going to be trouble. We now jump to the, I think it's the interior of the Delta Flyer shuttle, the back cargo bay area, the science station.
And yeah, Harry and the doctor. The part that I don't remember ever going to, that part.
And it's Harry and the doctor. And Harry is so excited that he's finally going to get a chance to transmit these phase corrections to Seven. And he does. He transmits them to her. And we see Seven sort of telling the captain, I'm receiving a message in my cranial implant. And Janeway's like, does Harry know how to access them? And she says, no. And then Janeway quickly dismisses that and accepts it as fact. She's like, he must have found a way, like that. Yep. So input those phase corrections. She does. Mm-hmm. And it helps momentarily.
It works for a minute.
But then, boom, they're right out of it again. And that's when they fall out and they
stops
crash.
Stops working. It overloads. They crash. Amazing. Amazing. They can't shut down the slipstream, by the way. You know, Paris says, I can't do it. I've lost helm control.
Yeah.
Yeah. They fall out of slipstream.
You're the one that finds the L-class planet, by the way, right? You're the one that, hey, we find here's a planet. And Jamie says, go for it. Let's try that one. So,
yeah, it's a great crash sequence. That the ship crash landing on the planet is one of the best VisFX sequences in our
for the show,
7 years.
For the entire show, by far.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Very cinematic in its scope and big, you know,
really, really well done.
Yeah, very well done.
After the crash, we go back to the Delta Flyer in the future. And we see that Harry's struggling because the phase corrections didn't work. And now there's a tractor beam coming from LaForge's ship.
Right.
So we don't have much time. Harry's trying to figure out what he can tell them. And he has a panic attack, basically.
He freaks out. Well, because he had the core breach in less than 3 minutes. And I think one of his lines is, it took me 10 years to figure out these calculations. How am I supposed to find the right number in 3 minutes, less than 3 minutes?
Yeah.
But the doctor is the one that kind of calms Harry. And he's like, you know, I'm going to shake
that
you.
It was a really emotional scene, by the way.
Really, like, it really was.
The acting that you had to do was, you know, very loaded and emotionally big. Do you remember doing that scene?
I do remember that scene very vividly. And that was not the best take.
Really?
On a scale from 1 to 10, 10 is in the zone. You knocked it out of the park. Okay. Mm-hmm. That to me was probably like a 7 maybe, because what happened was on the best take, somebody on crew mm-hmm. dropped a hammer or a wrench, like very loudly, went clunk, clunk, clang, clunk, like that. Mm-hmm. And it actually, I was okay with that. That didn't zonk me out, but because it was so jarring, it tripped me up on one of my next lines that I had, you know what I'm saying? So I was like, and I just remember I was so angry because I was so in the zone on that one that it was so good.
But you didn't, but you lost the lines.
No, I lost the line is what I recall.
Yeah.
And it was, but even after that take, that botched up take, Bob Picardo walked over to me and he says, "Garrett, you can act." I mean, I remember that. That was like the funniest thing I've ever heard him say. He's like, "You've been working with me for 5 years, and now he goes, "Garrett, I don't ever see you in any scenes where you're doing anything. I mean, this is really the first time I've seen you act, and you can act. You really can." Oh. And I was like, "Well, thanks, Bob." So it was a nice gesture on his part. But sure, like I said, that one scene, the when I nailed it, that got screwed up because of the drop, was. And you know, as an actor, when you're in the zone, man, there's nothing like it. You sit there.
Oh, yeah.
Wow. I mean, it's just, it's a life, not life changing, but it's definitely one of those moments where you go, "Oh my God." And you feel so proud and just happy that you did nail it, that you nailed it. You know, it's just like, this is the best.
It's so funny because for our listeners, you do a lot of takes of each of these scenes. Like when the show's cut together, we have to pick the take We pick the take that we pick for so many reasons. Sometimes it's continuity of where your body was or where your arms were, what way you were leaning.
Yeah.
So there's some physical continuity that sometimes we have to use certain takes. You know, when you're editing, when they were editing your scene, they may have just dismissed the take with the hammer.
Yeah.
Thinking, oh, it's not a complete take, so never mind. We just won't even look at it.
We won't even look at it.
Yeah. They didn't even look at it. They might have just gone to the full take.
Yeah.
And they could have, maybe if they had the time or looked a little harder, they could have used part of that take before you know, the hammer fell.
Right. And then edited that in, right? At least have some of the perfect take. Yeah.
But often there's just, you know, the whole process, sometimes there's not enough time and people, they just miss it. Nobody even sees it, which is a shame.
Totally. I do really love how calm Chakotay is. He is so calm because when you hear warp core breach in 45 seconds, and then he goes, "Harry, now would be a good time." I mean, he's so calm in the face of imminent destruction. Right? Everyone's going to die. And then, you know, Harry realizing that the power is failing is another hurdle that he has to overcome, and quick thinking on his feet. Hey, doctor's mobile emitter, another power source. And that final yes moment was definitely a very climactic scene, a climactic moment of Harry figuring out
how to
send them the phase correction that'll shut it all down, which was the doctor's idea, by the way. You know, remember, Harry was so like, "Oh my God, I can't do this." He says, "Just send them something that will stop everything, you know, that they won't go into the slipstream at all." And so that was that yes, I got the calculation with, was it like 1.02 seconds left before the breach? It was like there, exactly. 3, 2, 1, done.
Yeah.
So very, very energetic.
Very close, very close. He sends it with a big yes. We go to the bridge, new set of phase corrections. The quantum drive ends up going offline. The strip scene collapses. And I love the moment after this happens, the quiet moment where the shots were all pushing in on different characters going.
That montage?
Where did the message? Yeah, where did it come from? Like, where did the message come from? They can't figure it out. We're 10 years, but they did move 10 years closer.
10 years closer,
And we've got this voiceover with Janeway talking about, you know, how they are 10 years closer.
Mm-hmm.
And we cut to mess hall at this point.
Yeah.
And Harry's by himself.
He's still trying to figure out who sent the phase corrections.
Janeway comes in and Janeway tells him that it came from the future.
And well, first she says a guardian angel, which is
guardian
like,
angel, oh, yeah.
I wish I could believe that. Believe it. His name is Harry Kim, Captain. Uh-huh. Seven found a Starfleet security code embedded in the transmission. Yours. So is very emotional.
Very emotional. Great little spin at the end there. Mm. He's a hero. I like when she says, you know, about temporal paradoxes. Don't even try to figure them out.
Yes.
don't even. That's what I think when I try to figure out temporal paradoxes. Don't even try. And she does say all that matters is that somewhere, somehow, sometime, you came through for us, Harry.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then she leaves him this message on a tricorder and he plays it back.
Yeah.
And we see that it's the message that we didn't see before.
No,
we
caught the end clip of it. Yeah.
Just which I love that tie in there.
Really great writing. Cool. Really good writing.
Agreed. Mm-hmm. Agreed.
From Harry Kim to Harry Kim. And even now, I mean, I've seen this episode probably, I'm going to guess 15, 20 times over the years. Mm-hmm. And it always still chokes me up at the end. You know, there's always a moment or two in this episode where I'm getting a little teary eyed. So what is your lesson for this entire episode?
This is a very important lesson that I learned from watching this episode. And the lesson I learned is always listen to Tom. Okay.
Okay.
Because Tom said, don't do it. Don't do this. Trust me. 23 simulations, 23 catastrophes. Don't do it. That's my lesson. I don't have anything deeper. What's yours?
My lesson's a little deeper than that. And it is in the line that Harry Kim has to the doctor. He says, this is no ordinary phone call, doc. We're talking to yesterday. Timing is everything. And that is my lesson, is timing is everything. It is so true. And that's in every part
that's
of life.
That's a good lesson.
It really is. Whether it's, you know, your career, your investment in stocks or whatever it may be, you know, or real estate, timing is everything.
Or meeting the love of your life.
Exactly.
You know, timing is everything. I like that.
Mm-hmm. So that's going to be my overall lesson.
I like that. I also like listen to Tom.
Okay, you like
always listen to Tom is also.
That's a good one too.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Yeah. What is your rating of this episode?
Okay, so for rating this episode, for everybody out there listening, we've decided to add a little something extra to our ratings. We have had our admirals and our captains all vote and chime in on ratings. So we do not know the rating ahead of time. We give our rating, and then I'm going to let Garrett know what the outcome of that poll was.
Yeah.
So my rating, I give this, I wrote it down. As I watched, a 9 out of 10.
Nice.
Very high for my my typical, I can be tough on episodes, but this one I thought was really, really good. Great, great story, great sci-fi premise, great acting all around. It flew by. Mm-hmm. The execution, I thought, from the technical crew, the set design and visual.
All phases in sync.
And I know that you said earlier this was a hairy episode, and I don't disagree with that. But what I did love about it is it had the whole crew involved.
It did. Everybody
involved. And that's always a big part for me of a successful episode.
Yeah, that's one of your criteria and your rating is always if everyone's involved, that's a thumbs up for you. If you only have a couple people and everyone else is kind of forgotten, that's a thumbs down. So we know your rating criteria.
I give it a 9 out of 10. What about you?
I'm going to give it a 9.2. So I'm going to add a little bit more on there. I'm just going to do that. And my 0.8 that I didn't give it a full 10 is due to a couple of things that do-overs that I'll talk about in the bonus materials. So,
okay. All right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So you're a 9.2.
I'm a 9.2.
I have a solid 9.
Yes.
And drum roll for these, the ratings from the fans.
Yes.
For Timeless is a 9 out of 10.
The same as yours. Okay.
It was a 9 out of 10, which is crazy.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I feel like I'm on the pulse of this thing. So. Yeah. So are you? 9.2. We're all very close. And that's a high rating because a lot of our episodes, I've seen other places like online where some episodes will get, you know, lower ratings, and the fans can be tough.
Yes.
And, you know, have high standards for the show.
Yeah.
So they can be tough, but nine out of 10 is great.
I almost wish we started this fan interaction and asking them what their rating is earlier, because I really want to know how they rated the Trilogy of Terror, those three episodes.
Maybe we should put out a poll and go back and do some bonus.
Rise, Darkling, and Favorite Son. What are your ratings? Just curious.
I would be curious. Okay.
All right. So next week, let us chat and discuss Infinite Regress. Would you say regress or regress? How do you pronounce it?
I would say regress.
Regress.
Infinite regress.
Okay.
Infinite regress. I don't know, actually. Now I'm confused.
Is it tomato, infinite tomato?
Regress. I think I would say regress.
Now that you kind of say it. Okay, good. That will be our episode next week. Thank you, everyone, for joining us. And in our review of our 100th episode of Voyager Timeless, we'll see you next week.
See everybody then.